Welcome to Christian Historical Fiction Talk. I'm your host, author Liz Tolsma, and I am so glad that you joined us today. If you are new here, then please be sure to subscribe to Christian Historical Fiction Talk on your favorite podcasting platform so that you don't miss out on any of our wonderful authors that we have coming up. We are scheduling new ones all the time, some returning favorites, some really fabulous ones coming up, so you'll want to be sure to be around for that. For those of you who have been with me for a while, welcome back. Always glad to have you along. Be sure to also check out Christian Historical Fiction Talk on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Keep up with us there and join the conversations that we have over there. And finally, if you would go over to my website and just check out my Patreon, I would appreciate it. Think about supporting the podcast. There are costs associated with it, and any little bit that you could help with would be greatly, deeply appreciated. And to show my appreciation for that, there are all kinds of different little rewards that I give, all kinds of little goodies, such as bonus content and a book giveaway and a chance to ask the author questions. So depending on which level that you subscribe at, you can take advantage of all of that. All right, let's move on to our guest for today. Jill Eileen Smith is here. She is a third-time guest, and it's always good to have her along. She has a brand new book out called Daughter of Eden, which is a fascinating look at the life of Eve. And I'm going to stop there and let her tell you more about the book. Please help me in welcoming Jill Eileen Smith to the show, talking about her book, Daughter of Eden. Welcome to the show, Jill. It is so good to have you back with us again.
Thank you so much for inviting me again. It's great to be here.
I love talking to you and talking to you about your wonderful biblical fiction books. And we will dig into Daughter of Eden here in just a couple of minutes. But before we get started, why don't you just share a little bit about yourself with the listeners?
Well, it's been a challenging year this past year, but to backtrack, I am the wife of my husband, Randy. We've been married almost 46 years. We have three adult children, sons, daughters-in-law, and three grandchildren, and we're pretty excited to have those little ones in our life. A year ago, we moved, so now we've had the challenge of being in a new home, which we love. And we lost my mom last year and our cat. So now we have two new kittens. That is a challenge. you can follow their adventures on my social media if you're interested, but they bring us joy and trouble. So we're getting used to that. But yeah, life is good. We are glad to be alive and glad to be where God has us right now.
That sounds good. Yes, I'm so sorry to hear about your mom, and you have my sympathies on her loss. And
she was my biggest fan. She read all of my books up till Daughter of Eden, and so it's partly dedicated to her.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is so sweet. I'm sure that she was so proud of you.
Yeah, she was. I always enjoyed hearing her comments after she read one of my books, and she understood them. At 98 years old, she read the last one, and she still grasped it. They say reading fiction helps keep your brain sharp, and it certainly did for her. So,
well, that's great. That's good to know, because everybody here, everybody listening, loves to read fiction. So maybe we'll all get to reach that milestone of 98 like your mom did.
Maybe so.
That'd be great. So you mentioned that, and I mentioned that your new book is Daughter of Eden, which I love the title. It's so intriguing. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the story?
Well, I wanted to dig into the story of Adam and Eve, but I didn't quite know where to start. And so I decided to start before the beginning, before time began. So we take our first step into the heavenlies where God lives, and we get a glimpse of what it might have looked like to one of the archangels, Michael, to see God create, because he created the angels, and they were created before the earth, I believe, based on the fact that the morning stars sang together when he created. And I think they were probably on hand for that. My interpretation, but so we see the unseen realm. We see the garden and them living there. We see the fall of Lucifer and his hatred for the Creator and how he uses that hatred to go after the apple of God's eye, which is the humans God has made. And then after they fall, it's the story outside of Eden and what did that look like? And it's something where they had to discover how to do everything because it wasn't easy in the garden anymore and they didn't know how to even make clothes. They never had to. So it was a process of taking them through learning how to survive all the way up to the point where she has multiple children. They watch generations and generations go by because they live a really long time. I think Adam was 900 and something, and no one knows how long Eve lived. So it was just an exploration of what they felt after sin, the conflict they dealt with, how the guilt, the blame, and just a lot of longing for Eden, at least on her part.
Yeah. I'm sure they must have longed for Eden after they lost it. Mm-hmm. You know, they say you don't realize what you had until it was gone. I'm sure that had to be true for them. They realized the extent of their sin and what it cost them and what it cost all humanity. And they mm-hmm. must have longed to go back and get a do-over. But unfortunately, that's not how it works.
No, but they did get a promise of a do-over in a sense because God promised the Redeemer. And so I think that made the enemy hate them all the more because he didn't get a do-over. He didn't get promised a Redeemer. None of the demons did, but the humans did. So that battle still rages today, right? And the enemy of our souls goes after the apple of God's eye, which is the people he's created in his image. And so the war rages, and here we are.
I love that you thought enough about this, and I can see how much you looked at the biblical text and thought about some of the underlying things there, that you thought about them not knowing how to make clothes or gather food, you know, all the things that they didn't know how to do, how to survive. Mm-hmm. So that was a really interesting part of the story and shows your real thoughtfulness in crafting these biblical fiction novels.
Well, thank you.
What made you want to write about Eve and Adam and Eve?
Well, part of it was when I was given the contract to do The Prince and the Prodigal on Joseph's story, they also listed two unnamed women. So I had to find two women in Old Testament women to write about. But unfortunately, I'd already written about most of the ones we've heard of. I could have made up a woman or gone after some obscure person, or I could have done some. There was a few that I hadn't touched on that people may have heard of, like Gomer and things like that. But I had no desire for those women. Adam and Eve and Noah's wife, who is the next book that comes out next year, they were the ones that I really found them fascinating, and I wanted to explore it deeper. Fortunately, Ravel agreed with me.
That's good. That's good. Good for all of us. There had to be a lot of challenges in writing this. You mentioned the challenge of knowing where to start the story. What were mm-hmm. some of the other challenges to writing about Eve?
Well, kind of knowing how to end it. You know, like how far do you take her life? Because we're not told how long she lives. And we're not told. The only other people given after Seth is born is the genealogy of those men that follow in the line of Seth. And so I looked at all that and I made a timeline from Adam to Noah to see how old was when, you know, and all that. And so I do include one of the descendants that has always intrigued me, and that was Enoch, who walked with God and God took him. So I have Eve living past that, and, you know, Methuselah's in the story, and then a bunch of kids that I name that aren't named in scripture, except Cain and Abel, of course. And so I wanted to figure out, well, how can, you know, what does she do with her life being going on so long? So I skip a lot of time, unfortunately, because you kind of have to when they live 900 years.
Yeah.
You can't go, this all happened in a day, you know, or a week, right, or even a year. So I really enjoyed putting in Enoch's story woven into hers. And then we bring out the Nephilim, who were, I guess it's debatable in some circles as to who they were, but I take them to be where it says in scripture that the sons of God came down and mated with the daughters of men, and they bore giants. And the Nephilim, in my opinion, were not fully human. And I believe, in my opinion, and some things I've read, that they were part of the reason for the flood. Because, again, the enemy wants to destroy humanity. And what greater way to do it than by destroying the perfect image bearers? They could no longer be image bearers if they were not fully human. So they play a part. And the watchers, or the demons who now walk the earth, were also kind of talked of in the story. You don't get too much with them, but it's kind of a little speculative, I guess, along with biblical, because there's really nothing you can find in history, because it was all buried in the flood, except for the biblical account, and maybe some stories of creation from other cultures, which are could all be similar, like the flood. The story of Noah's Ark has got a lot of different stories of it in different cultures, but essentially probably all came from the same source. So we have this picture of it in scripture, but we're not given a ton of information. It has, so a lot of it had to come from my experience with humanity. Human, you know, we all have interactions with people, and what that, just weaving that kind of conflict and resolution into all of their lives.
You sort of just mentioned this a little bit, but we don't know an awful lot about Eve. She is not really mentioned much after the third chapter of Genesis. Mm-hmm. How did you go about supplementing? Were there sources that you used to supplement what we may have been able to know about her, other Bible passages? How did you go about finding information that you could use to create the character of Eve?
Well, we know Adam and Eve are spoken of in the New Testament. And so, in my opinion, whenever Jesus or the apostles speak of an Old Testament character, it legitimizes their reality. Because a lot of people want to say Adam and Eve were a myth. But if they're spoken of in the New Testament, I don't believe they were a myth. Those people, and the Jewish people mostly today, those that follow the Jewish religion, not secular Jews, but, you know, religious Jews, would follow that faith as well. And so there isn't anything really that I know of outside of scripture, but I did take whatever scripture would have had. And I went to other parts of scripture for descriptions of the heavenly realms, or the, you know, the fall of Lucifer and different things like that to describe what things might have looked like. And then we have stories of creation in Job. God talks to Job about a little bit about creation in the way he describes things. So we're aware of different names of animals, and like Leviathan and, you know, Behemoth. I consider them dinosaurs, you know, and there's a lot of different things that you see in scripture just about creation, even though it doesn't mention Adam and Eve, that you can use for seeing the bigger picture. I hope that makes sense.
Definitely does. That's helpful. That's good to know. I was reading over some of the early reviews of Daughter of Eden. As we're taping this, it has not yet released, but by the time this podcast comes out, it will have released. But in reading the early reviews, someone called the language that you use in the book almost flowery. And they didn't mean it as being over the top. They meant that really as a compliment, just really beautiful, lush, descriptive language, that you have such a beautiful voice when you write. Hmm. How has your writing voice, your writing style changed over the years? Because you've been at this for a while.
That's a tough question. I mean, I don't like to be overly descriptive, but descriptive enough to give you the picture to visualize. But I've read books that get so into describing like what someone looks like down to, you know, this or that little small feature that is great if that's the type of writer you are. But I'm like, get on with the story. What actually happens? I don't need to see this person's scar on their cheek unless that's really significant, or you know what I mean? I consider myself a little bit simpler in how I write, but I'm very perfectionist. So as I write, I have to visualize it. I have to cast the characters ahead of time so I can see them, like find photos that I depict as them and get to know them a little bit, but I really get to know them as I write. But then as I write a first draft is really like a second draft, because I don't want to have to go back and fix it too many times. You know what I mean? Though I do at least four or five rewrites, it's still, I don't know that it's changed that much. I guess with my very first book, I rewrote that so many times, you could say, yes, I've learned since then. I think I've fallen into a groove in the last several where I follow a specific way of doing it. And I now know the type of writer I am. You know, I used to try and, oh, let's just see if I can see to the pants this book. And then I realized, nope, I have to have an outline. So I have to start over again. And, you know, I'm learning now I like it if I give myself a little bit more time to get to know them before I begin the book. Like I might write out a few character traits. But before I didn't do that, I just found their picture and their name and then just got started. But that takes a lot more rewriting because, you know, you're more, your outline is there. I always have to have an outline, which is really a paragraph summary that can go on for pages, but it's just for me and I use it loosely. And then I kind of just go with however I see it flowing. I don't know. As far as my voice goes, I guess I'm not really aware of it changing that much, but then it's hard to tell your own voice, right? I don't even like to listen to myself on podcasts because I don't like the sound of my voice. So
that's very true. That's so true. Yeah, I get that. Every author, I haven't seen one author that doesn't have a one-star review somewhere or another. When you do, you read your reviews, and if you do and you see the one star ones, how does that affect you? Does it?
I learned in my first series when I got to Bathsheba, which is only my third book, to stop reading my reviews. That was the first time I felt really good about that book. It had gotten good reviews, and then someone gave it a 2-star review, and I read it, and then I just got to a place where I thought, no, the 5 stars can make me too high, too thinking I'm too good at it. And the 1 stars are so deflating or the 2 stars. Even a 3-star can be deflating. Criticism can be, people can think they're helping you. I've had letters where people try to tell me, oh, you got this comma wrong, or your editor should have found this wording isn't right. And it's like they think that's helpful. And I don't want to, you know, say that I don't want to put them down for that. But those things aren't helpful to a writer. Writers can't fix it. Well, I mean, we can now in the digital age. We can go back and, you know, I will send them to my editor and she'll say yes or no. And if it needs fixing, they'll fix it. But those aren't things we usually go back and deal with, because it's been through proofreader after proofreader before it's gotten printed in the first place. But also, my reviews are just, if my editor sends them to me, or not my editor, my publicist sends them to me, I might glance at a few, especially the ones that come from big sources like Booklist or whatever. You know, if they give you a great review, that's always comforting, and they might make a meme out of it and post it on social media, and that's cool. You know, I'm grateful. I'm always grateful, but I guess I like kindness. And the ones that are not and are low starred often are not as kind. At least that's how I found in the beginning. So it's just not my heart. It's just better for my heart to not read good or bad, because I know I'm somewhere in the middle.
That makes a lot of sense. You're right. Too much praise can be a bad thing, and not enough praise could be a bad thing too. So
sure.
Get that. Yes. On your website, you have a whole section that you call Live Grace. You even have a hashtag Live Grace. I would encourage the listeners to go to your website, and I'll have the link in the show notes, and read that whole section. It's quite lengthy, but can you just sort of summarize what it means to you to live grace?
Well, I can't remember what the article said, to be honest, because I wrote it so long ago. So that's a disclaimer. But to me, live grace means I'm living my life in a way that reflects the grace of God every day. And I don't, honestly. I need His grace. In fact, the other day I was in one of my, we get our up and down moments. This, I think writers are more susceptible, or artists are more susceptible to the mood swings than, say, my engineer husband, who doesn't get those. And I was in a point of just really feeling God's need for the Lord. And I read a verse I've always known, and it's quoted, I memorized it as, "My grace is sufficient for you." But the version I read it in said, "My grace is all you need." And I paused and I thought about that, and I realized that, yes, all the things I think I need for my happiness or my peace of mind are things I want. All I really need is His grace. And if we live grace, we're living out one of the character traits of God, His greatest, well, not His greatest, but a great one, because if not for the grace of God, we wouldn't be in His family. Jesus wouldn't have come. There wouldn't have been any Redeemer. Everything is by grace. We can't be saved except by grace. And that's why when I sign emails, I sign them in His grace, because I am in His grace and I want to live grace. So that's why I started the hashtag. I don't know that it'll ever take off, but I hope people will live grace, whether they see that hashtag or read the article or not, because if they know Jesus, that's what we need to do.
So you mentioned that next up is a book on Noah's wife. Can you just give us a little hint as to what that is all about?
Well, yes, I'm almost done with the 4th draft, which then I intend to turn it in. The story starts, we're in Noah's wife's point of view in little snippets, but in the rest of it, we switch back and forth from different points of view of the different people that were on the ark. And it's from before the flood, during the building of the ark, and after the flood. And so it's trying to process what that was like for them to be taunted and maybe sabotaged and trying to survive and preach and build, and how, what did that look like? And then on the Ark for over a year, what did that look like? We went to visit the Ark in Kentucky. It was huge and so many floors to, I mean, only three floors, but the walking nearly killed me because I can't walk that far. But it was really something. And to imagine having to come up with all the design to take care of the animals, I didn't get that detailed. I wanted to focus on the people more than, you know, all the stuff they focus on at the Ark Adventure. But it was still fascinating. And I think that I wouldn't have wanted to be one of the only eight people alive to survive that way and then start all over again, and only to find out Sin didn't drown. You know, I mean, the Nephilim did, and so they didn't have that corrupting them, but Sin never left them, and it never can until eternity, and then when it's truly gone. So I explore all that.
Well, that sounds fascinating. We're really looking forward to that. And if the listeners would like to keep in touch with you while they wait for the next book, how can they go ahead to connect with you?
Well, my website has a link on several of the pages with a little envelope that says sign up for my newsletter. That's probably your best way to go if you want more personal stuff. That I usually send those out four times a year, maybe a little more often, especially when there's a release or some news. And then follow me on social media. I do put my blogs, I try to blog a little more often, but you could subscribe to that too on my website. But I'm on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter mainly. I have others, but those are the big three.
Okay, that sounds great. We'll be sure to do that. Thank you so much, Jill, for taking time out of your busy day and your writing and all that you have to get done to come talk to us. We have enjoyed it as always.
Thank you again so much for inviting me. It's been wonderful.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed our chat with Jill. She is such a lovely and gracious lady and always very knowledgeable about her subject matter, very thoughtful. And it really shows through in her book, Daughter of Eden. If you would like to find out more about Jill, about the book, or to get a handy link to the book, then please visit my website, liztolsma.com, and you'll find the show notes there. You'll also find a link, as I said before, to my Patreon over there. And I would just like to give a shout out to one of my patrons, Paula Kay. Thank you so much, Paula, for supporting the show. Really appreciate it and appreciate having you along as part of the Christian Historical Fiction Talk family. Next week on the show, I am so excited because I get to chat with Sarah Sundin. She is one of my favorite authors. I just know when I pick up one of her books, it's going to be outstanding. And I have been looking forward to this new book of hers, I think, since she was on here last year and told us what it was going to be about and where it's set, which is in Denmark. And so you do not want to miss out on my interview next week with Sarah Sundin. So please be subscribed so that you don't miss out when that goes live. And if you want to hear it early, my Patreons get early access as well. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to listen to Christian Historical Fiction Talk and to support the authors that come on here, because it's really all about them and about promoting good quality Christian historical fiction. I thank you from the bottom of my heart for all the support that you have shown me over these past 100 plus episodes. I hope you all have a wonderful week, and we will see you next time.